we are going to be obviously looking at passage tonight. So if you've not got a Bible and you'd like one, it's probably best while I'm just doing a bit of an intro to put your hands up, and hospitality will whiz round and speedily give you one. So that's always less awkward than you thumbing through while I'm talking to you. So over this summer season, if you have dropped into St. Barnabas, we have been looking at the Gospel of Mark. It has been an action-packed journey so far. So far, we have seen, as many of our preachers have said, that Mark is a fast and furious and frank gospel. It doesn't waste any time. Mark doesn't draw out or dress up who Jesus is or what he does. He's cast out demons. He's walked on water. He's calmed storms. He's raised Jairus' daughter from death. And all of that in 8 chapters. He's doing pretty well so far. And tonight, we are looking at Peter. If you're a bit like me and you've been delving into Mark throughout the weeks, you might have got a bit frustrated with the disciples. I have on a number of occasions. I wanted to just deep it, like go in and just shake them and say, do you not know what is in front of you and what is going on? Because they never seem to get the point. And Jesus even gets frustrated with them. He said, you are blind, you don't see. But tonight, ladies and gentlemen, the disciples get it. Yeah, they get there. I'm glad that we're all pleased for them. But as they are just men and humans, they go from being very right to very wrong in the space of a verse. So never mind. Don't worry. They get there. The penny drops for them slightly tonight. So what we're going to do is we're going to read our passage. So it is Mark 8, 27 to 33. And it is on page 956 of the Church Bibles. How lovely. And if it's on your phone, well, you just bring it up. So, Jesus and his disciples went on to the villages around Caesarea Philippi. On the way, he asked them, who do people say I am? They replied, some say John the Baptist, others say Elijah, and still others one of the prophets. But what about you, he asked, who do you say I am? Peter answered, you are the Messiah. Jesus warned them not to tell anyone about him. He then began to teach them that the Son of Man must suffer many things and be rejected by the elders, the chief priests, and the teachers of the law, and that he must be killed and after 3 days rise again. He spoke plainly about this, and Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him. But when Jesus turned and looked at his disciples, he rebuked Peter. Get behind me, Satan, he said. You do not have in mind the concerns of God, but merely human concerns. See, I told you they get it right and then they get it wrong. So before we go into the main part, I thought it'd be helpful just to have a little bit of context because a lot of stuff has happened. And this passage, though it's very short, is a little bit of a minefield. So thank you for giving me that one. So first of all, immediately before Jesus speaks to his disciples, we've read of Jesus healing a man with spit. Rachel spoke about that last Sunday. So spit, healing, all of that, blindness. Download that podcast. But what I want us to remember from last week, or just to have in the front of our minds, is that when Jesus healed the man and he got his sight back, it was blurry. He said to Jesus, when Jesus said to him, oh, what do you see? Jesus was thinking, yeah, you see it all. He said, no, I see trees, people, a bit blurry. And Jesus was like, okay, right, we'll do a bit more. And then his sight was clear. And I think it's interesting that just as a man has received his sight back and it's blurry, Jesus then says to his disciples, who do you say I am? They have insight. They've been wandering around. They've been seeing all the things. They've seen Jesus cast out things. They've had like little sessions by the lake. He's told them all about the kingdom. But they don't see it. They haven't fully grasped it. And tonight, yes, they say you're the Messiah. But as we go on to see, actually, their sight's blurry. They need to put the glasses on, because otherwise if I take these off, you're all blurry. That might be a good thing, actually. But it's a bit like the disciples. They've not got clear vision yet. And I don't think it's any coincidence that Jesus speaks to these disciples outside of a town or a village. Jesus has got quite used to being outside towns and villages and cities speaking, because it was getting a bit dangerous for Jesus. A little bit close for comfort. The authorities were like creeping up on him. They're going to be like, oh, we're going to get rid of you soon. And the second thing that we need to think about is, where is Caesarea Philippi? You know, obviously it's a top holiday destination that we've all been to this August. It's actually a pagan town. So it was in the north of the region, and it had loads of temples that were devoted to the worship of pagan gods. It wasn't really a Jewish town. There were lots of Gentiles living there. And in Jesus' day, the latest tourist attraction in Caesarea Philippi was the temple to Caesar Augustus. A massive temple had been erected, and people would go and worship Caesar, who was a man, he wasn't God, who was ruling this massive empire, and they would come and they would offer worship to him. I don't think it's a coincidence that Jesus takes them to this place and says, here, in the place where people say God is there, this man, Caesar Augustus, who's in front of you? Who do you identify yourself with? Because you've left your fishing boats by the shore, you've left your families, you've left everything. Who do you say I am? Who do people think I am? Because actually, it's really clear to us, because we've read part of the gospel, we also know how the story ends. But actually, if you were living in a backwater in Israel, who's this weird guy that everyone flocks to, who like cut into roofs to get close to him, who just want to touch him? Who is it? And the disciples offer three answers. As I would say in my classroom, I'm looking for one, not three. But, you know, the disciples were covering all bases. I get that. And the first they say it's John the Baptist. Now, I always find this one really confusing because John the Baptist existed when Jesus did. Like, they met, they chatted. John the Baptist baptized Jesus. So why did people think Jesus was John the Baptist? Well, a few weeks ago we heard that John the Baptist met a grisly end. His head was chopped off. It was sad. But some people thought that he was John the Baptist, had come back, and he was continuing on his message. Others thought he was Elijah. Now, Elijah, if you go to your Old Testament, is a prophet. And he didn't die according to Scripture. In fact, he was taken up to heaven. And the Jewish people thought that when the day of the Lord came, Elijah would come back and he would get everything ready. He'd get everyone sorted, get everyone's hearts in place. Everyone would be ready for the day of the Lord to come. Good thinking there. But we know that Jesus wasn't Elijah. And then others said one of the prophets. Israel hadn't had a prophet for 400 years. And they were thinking to themselves, oh, maybe this Jesus, he's doing some kooky stuff, but he's a good talker. And he's giving this message about the kingdom, repenting, what it means to be in life with God. Maybe he's a prophet. No, he wasn't one of those either. So Jesus turns up the heat, and that is where we're going to start our main part of the sermon tonight. So we're going to look at 3 points tonight, right, rebuke, and realign. So that's, if you like your little framework, that's where we're going on our little journey. I'm highlighting, as I do for an outstanding lesson observation. You highlight the journey we're going on. So first of all, right, Jesus turns up the heat. You know, the disciples have given an answer. Great. Well done, the disciples, because it was kind of right. And then he says to them, who do you identify me as? Who do you say I am? And I can imagine a deadly silence just falls. They are avoiding eye contact with Jesus. They're like, oh no, don't pick me for this answer. Their hands are probably getting a bit clammy. They're probably like sweating. And they're probably like, oh no, someone, anyone, not me. And they're thinking, right, oh, maybe Peter, maybe James. Oh, you don't know about that though. Oh no. And they're waiting. And what was probably a split second probably seems like eternity. And then Peter steps forward. I can imagine him being like, don't worry, guys, I've got one for the team here. This is my moment. And he turns to Jesus and he's like, you are the Messiah. And at that point, I think the disciples are like, oh, is that the right answer? Is that the wrong answer? Oh, Peter, did you get it wrong? Because we don't get it right often. And Jesus doesn't really say anything. He just looks at Peter. The penny's finally dropped. Jesus has been really frustrated with them. Peter has declared, you're the Messiah. You're the hope. You're going to deliver Israel. Hello. No. Why aren't you saying anything, Jesus? And then Jesus says to them not to tell anyone. Peter's got the answer right. He's told not to tell anyone. Oh, I'd be very confused. But the reason is tied up with that term, Messiah. And to us today, if you've ever been to church, especially at Christmas, they talk a lot about the Messiah. But a few of us actually sometimes think, well, what does that term mean? What is a Messiah? And for us, it's synonymous with Jesus. Jesus, Messiah, Son of God. For the disciples, not so clear cut. At the time, Peter and the disciples would have had different ideas of who the Messiah was. In Jewish tradition, it's a little bit ambiguous, as everything is in theology. there's not one clear answer. But the term Messiah wasn't just a spiritual figure. And so on the PowerPoint, oh, we've got a bit of Greek, we've got a bit of Hebrew, but they both mean the same thing, anointed. And this dates back to a tradition when in Israel, if you were king of Israel, you'd be anointed with oil. So King David was anointed with oil. And this was a tradition that carried on. And eventually, people in Israel thought, well, the Messiah, the one who's going to come, will be a king, he'll be a military leader, and he'll be anointed. So Peter's like, you're the Messiah. He probably looks at him and thinks, oh, you're not much of a king, are you? You're not much of a military leader. We're your army, all 12 of us, fishermen. And Jesus is saying, no, you can't tell people I'm the Messiah because of what the Messiah meant. The Messiah was someone who was going to come and overthrow Israel's oppressors. He was going to raise Israel to be the great nation that God had promised them to be. He was going to bring deliverance from all oppression, both physical and spiritual. And he was going to challenge the slavery that Israel had been in. And Jesus knows that if this gets out, he's going to be a bit dead quite quickly. And he obviously does die, and he is. And Jesus predicts in this passage the first time his death. It's the first time in Mark and in the gospel where he says, sorry, guys, I'm going to die, but I'm going to rise again. I don't think they heard that part, actually. I think they were just too confused about his death. And so Jesus says to them, don't tell anyone, because if you do, it's all going to end too quickly, and you still need me because your sight's not clear. You still need me with you, and I've still got my Father's work to do. So Jesus begins to teach them, and he says, the Son of Man. Now, last sermon series, we're looking at Daniel. Daniel 7 talks about this figure, the Son of Man. Also a cheeky little messianic figure. And as you can see, it talks about here that this one would come and he would have power and he would have authority and his kingdom would have no end. Jesus is saying, this is the type of Messiah I'm going to be. My kingdom isn't going to be one that's going to be challenged. And the freedom I'm going to give you is not just Israel from your physical oppression. No, it is going to be spiritual and it's going to be deep. And God is here with you. And I'm that person. I've come from heaven to be with you, to show you what you need to do, where you need to be, and how to live. And that is something that I'm not going to come with my armies, because I don't need armies on this earth. I've got my Father in heaven. And I'm not going to come as a military leader and chop off all the Romans' heads and tear down Caesar Augustus' temple. I'm going to go to a cross, and I'm going to die. And I'm going to challenge everything that this world sees as strong and right and messiahship by going to that cross. And then I'm going to rise again in 3 days and you're going to see me for the Messiah that I am. And for us, that's great because we know that Jesus' promises are true. But if you're the disciples, that's a little bit of a curveball because they were expecting a Messiah who would free them from pain, who would free them from suffering, not one who would experience it himself. And so that's where Peter speaks. Peter's like, oh dear, this isn't going well, is it, guys? This isn't the Messiah we were thinking of. And so Peter does something that's quite brave. He goes to rebuke Jesus. He goes to Jesus, who he's just got an answer right, and says, Jesus. You can imagine it, like in one corner there's Peter, the other corner there's Jesus, and they're going to fight each other. Like Peter's going, right, okay. Jesus, here we go. Don't think you're at the synagogue that day where they were teaching about the Messiah. I'll just remind you, you didn't get the memo. I know you're really tired. You've probably been doing a lot of preaching, a lot of healing. I'll just remind you. I won't tell the boys. We'll do it, you know, privately. I'll just get you back on track. And Peter probably, you know, had a lot of courage to do that because what Jesus had said to him had really penetrated his heart because everything that Peter had built his life on, everything that he thought was secure, even in the depths of Israel, where he was living and paying taxes to Rome, was being challenged by what Jesus said. And Peter probably went and said, Jesus, this isn't how it's meant to be. This isn't what I signed up for. I didn't identify myself as someone who was going to die. I identify myself with Messiah, the one that's going to champion everything. And I bet Peter was not expecting what was to come. Jesus turns and rebukes him. Peter probably didn't plan that part. But actually, and Jesus says to him, get behind me, Satan. Quite quite strong terms there. And to understand what Jesus is saying, we need to look at Mark chapter 1, verse 12 to 13, when Jesus is sent into the wilderness. He goes into the wilderness and he takes on the full temptation of Satan. And Mike Pavley did a great talk about Jesus taking on the full temptation early on in the series, and I do really recommend that. And in it, in Mark's gospel, he doesn't really go into much detail, but in Matthew and Luke, he does. And Satan tempts Jesus with three things. And one of those is, if you stand at the top of the mountain, it's Jesus and Satan. And Satan says, if you turn and worship me, everything you see, all the kingdoms of the world will be yours. You'll have power, you'll have authority. You won't need to die because I'm going to give it you. You just have to worship me. You have to follow my plan. And Jesus rebukes Satan. And I think in some ways, there's a similar rebuke that he's saying to Peter. Peter's plan is for greatness. He's all behind the idea of the Messiah being great, for Jesus having all kingdoms under his control. But he doesn't quite grasp that actually that Messiah that he's looking for, that political figure, isn't what Jesus wants to be. Or in fact, anything in his ministry has showed him to be. And so Jesus says to Peter, get behind me, Satan. Because this vision, Peter, that you are steering me on is not my vision. It's not God's vision. It's your vision. You've made it. Man has made it, not God. God hasn't said that to you. And in some translations as well, especially in Matthew, it says, you are a stumbling block to me. Peter is a stumbling block to the plan of God. Oh, how does that one work? Because if Peter and the disciples keep pushing Jesus down this idea of being a Messiah who's going to lead them to military victory, they'll fail to see that actually that course is not what Jesus has plotted. It's not the way that he's plotted or planned from the beginning of time. No. And what Jesus is saying is, you're not leading me. You're not the one that's leading this show, Peter. Get behind me. See what I do. See how I lead. See how I walk. See how I spend time with God the Father. See the type of kingdom I'm establishing here, because it is not one where we have our little flags and saying, woo, we're great, we're the chosen people. No, it's not that. It's where we're the last. It's where we're hanging out with the people who are lost in this world and where we're giving up to live simply. It's not one where I've got my crown, Peter, and I'm saying, oh, look at me, King Jesus, here I am. No. And if you're leading me, Peter, down that road, then get behind me, because I don't want to go down that road. And Jesus is saying, from behind, you'll see what I'm going to be. And what is beautiful, what is so beautiful, is that Jesus knows that Peter's got it wrong. But he doesn't leave Peter there. And Peter gets it a lot wrong, a lot in the gospel. You know, he denies Jesus when he's being put on trial. But Peter then goes on to be great. He goes on, he takes what he's learnt from behind. And in Acts, we read of Peter setting up churches, encouraging Christians, taking the messages out, healing people, living a life that reflects the Messiah he came to profess. But his sight was blurry at that time. When he rebukes Jesus, it's blurry. And in fact, we can't even say to Peter, get it sorted, mate, go to the optician and get it a bit clearer, spend a bit more time with Jesus, because he did. But it was only when he saw that Jesus' promises were true and faithful, when he encountered the risen Lord, that he could say, Jesus, you're the Messiah. You are the Son of God. And he could say it without fear of rebuke. And he knew that he'd got the answer right, even though he'd got it wrong. And so we need to think about what we do. We are like Peter. We get it wrong all the time. And that's where we have to realign ourselves. Because in order to realize that Jesus is the Messiah, we need to look at this verse. You do not have in mind the concerns of God, but merely human concerns. Peter knew in his heart that Jesus was the Son of God, but his head, his perception, was telling him something so very different. And actually, we're like that. Throughout the day, you know, if I have my quiet time in the morning, I go to work, mind is on godly things. Get into work, swing in, get my parking space. God's blessed me today. I've got a parking space. Fantastic. Stroll into work, get my free coffee. Thank you, Jesus. Again, another blessing. Thank you, God. I'll just bless other people. By about 12:30, My mind is all on humans' concerns. It's all about how many emails I've got to do, how many lessons I've got to plan, how many kids I've got to tell I haven't handed in their homework and sit with them in detention. It's not on God. And then it's at that point God has to give me a little nudge and say, Emma, hello, I'm here. Yes, I'm at work with you. Because God speaks like this to me, yes. He says, Emma, you need to have on your heart the concerns of God, the concerns of the kingdom. And I'm like, oh, yeah, thanks. Yeah. And then I'm like, oh, realign, Emma, realign. And actually, the need to realign and Peter's perception of Messiah, and in fact, our perception of who Jesus is and how we allow God to move in our life, is dictated by us. Peter's idea came from a place of insecurity. It came from a place of fear, and it came from a place of needing to be in control. His security was in following Jesus, who was going to be the Messiah that he wanted him to be. He had fear that it was all going to go wrong, so he was going to try and steer Jesus to be the Messiah he wanted him to be. Peter had plotted out the life and way they were going to move down to Jerusalem, they were going to have a grand entrance. Peter had got that plotted out. He was trying to control Jesus' strings, and he did that because he was insecure. He still knew Jesus. He was living with him. He was living with God on earth. Wow. Yet he still did all these things. No wonder we struggle. And actually, it's something that God is sometimes asking us to realign. Not massive life changes. It's not always him calling us out to be missionaries or him calling us to change job. Sometimes he's just asking us to realign how we see people and how we treat them and how we can't control social situations. Or we can't control our social media, so it makes us look really popular all the time. He's just asking us to engage and meet with people without our own agenda, but God's agenda. Something very different there. And it's something that I struggle with. I've spoken at the Seven before when I said last week, this week, I love control. I love being organized. You know, September is a great time for me. It's stationery shop. I've gone wild in Ryman's, let me tell you. It's a great time of year. I get new folders, I get new dividers, I get new pens. I've got one that when you take the lid off, you can stab a gold star. Gold star, yeah. Yeah. Shame none of you will get to see that gold star, but who knows. And I love being organized. I've got every lesson planned out. I know where I'm going to be. But I don't do it because I enjoy it. I hate it. I do it because I'm insecure, I'm fearful, and I love being in control. Because I can control how everything happens. I can control what my lessons do. I can control who I meet when I meet with them. Because if I don't have a plan, oh, what's going to happen? Oh, I don't like that. Oh, that could be awkward. No. So I'll get my diary all sorted. And I'll get everything done. Because I like to be in control, like Peter. And I like to slot in things that I'm going to do with God. And we're going to go and do this. And we're going to have this. And that's going to be lovely. I'll slot in my quiet time. And God, this is when you're going to speak to me. He doesn't always follow that instruction, which is really annoying because it's color-coded and everything. I mean, I think he should have followed that. But again, I have to realign. And it's something that I didn't really realize I did, which is shocking, until I was at university. And in my last year of university, I was studying theology. So all these heresies that I've made, you know, I just blamed the degree. It was fake. And I was at a university that was... a very stressful place to be, actually. And in my final year, I went back in third year and everyone had their plans set out of what they were going to be. I was like, oh, I haven't thought about what I'm going to do yet. I was like, no worries, I'll do what everybody else is doing. Wait for it. So degree in theology, you might be thinking vicaring. You might be thinking missionary. You might be thinking academic, next great theologian of our time. No, I was going to be a management consultant. I was going to go and work in the city, maybe an investment banker if I was going to have a good day, because that's what everyone else with theology did. It's true. So I got myself my grad scheme portfolio. I went round, I walked the walk, I talked the talk. I even read the FTSE 100. I still don't understand it. I went to a few interviews. They let me go to a few interviews. And I was like, oh, this is good. Yeah, city living, private healthcare on this job. Result. Mama Westbury was really pleased as well about this because she was like, this is a great career path, Emma. Just think about it. Flying around the world. I was like, I know. And I had prayed about these job interviews. Yeah, I had prayed about it. But I hadn't let God speak to me at all. It was all much like, oh, God, yeah, thank you so much for this interview. I'm going to ace it with you behind me. Great. Thanks. Right, bye. I've got to go. I didn't let him speak. And it was only until it was finals week, it was stressful, and our church were very good at dealing with students in stress. So they did their annual sermon about worry. So I sat there and I was like, oh yeah, a bit worried about the exams. And as I was sitting there, the Spirit just came on me and he said, Emma, you're so worried about your future. You're so worried about being successful with all your friends that you're going down a path that actually is one you've plotted. It's not one I've plotted. I don't really want you to do business management, if I'm honest. I don't think you'll be very good at it. How insulting. I could do EdExcel and like all of that stuff, like exam boards, but I couldn't do maths when it came to real life. And so I was like, okay, well, God, well, what am I going to do? And he was like, yeah, I'm seeing teaching, Emma. I was like, I don't like young people. He was like, oh, well, you've got to change that, haven't you? I was like, oh, but that doesn't really fit with my plan. He was like, well, that's why we're doing this, Emma. I was like, okay, fair enough. And then I knew deep down the reason I didn't want to do teaching was because I'd missed the boat for PGCE years and for Teach First. And so I knew the only way I'd get into teaching was if I became a teaching assistant. And that was not a plan I had for myself. I hadn't, you know, gone to one of the best universities in the world, paid a lot of money to teach someone how to count. And there God said, stumbling block, Emma, your ego. I was like, wow, you're knocking me while I'm down. And it was true, it was my ego. Because I didn't want to have to go back to my friends and say, oh yeah, so I'm not going to the city. I'm going to be a teaching assistant, yeah. And I did get a job, surprisingly, as a teaching assistant at a school based in Edmonton and Tottenham. And so my friends were like, oh, are you working in a private school? I was like, not quite, no, not quite. And that was a massive shock for me. That whole year, God had to constantly realign my course that I was plotting. And I had to let God be in the driving seat. And that terrified me because I'm insecure, I love to be in control, and I don't like not knowing where I'm going. I like Google image the place where I'm going to visit if I've never been there before. So God being in the driving seat isn't going to quite work very well. And I did let God be in the driving seat. But every so often, I like to direct God on his driving and tell him the path he should be going. And just a little nudge of the steering wheel. And God has to remind me that I'm not in control. Because I need to be behind him. Because when I'm behind him, I can see a lot clearer than when I'm in front of him. Because I'm following the path he's already made for me. It's not a path that I've made, that I've plotted. It's not a path that is made by the world that I exist in or the people I hang about with. It's plotted by God. So I can realign myself and focus that my heart is not concerned on things of the world and consumed by being accepted by the world or consumed by having everything secure in the way of the world. Because actually being a Christian is a really scary thing because we put our hands into God's. But he takes hold of them and he guides us. He doesn't leave you abandoned. He didn't leave Peter there in a place of rebuke. He led him forward and he made him into a great man of faith. And so, no, you know what? I don't know how my story ends. I don't know how any of yours is going to end. But if God is in my driving seat, it's going to be a lot better than mine. Because if I was in charge of the city, we'd have another recession. So you might all want to be just thanking God tonight that I did not go to the city. Just responsible for the future young minds of our generation. Yes. And so it comes back to that question of identity. Who do we see Jesus as? Do we see him as the Messiah that he is or the Messiah we want him to be? Because they're two very different things. We convince ourselves that our vision of God is God. But then God comes and breaks in and he reminds us and he shakes us up and he says, no, I'm much bigger, so much bigger than you could ever imagine. So tonight we have got our three areas of response. Perhaps you've been listening and you've been brought along to church before or you've gone to a carol service or you've been to an event and you've heard about this Jesus guy. And tonight, like the disciples, the penny has finally dropped and you want to say, yeah, Jesus, you are the Son of God. I want to meet with you tonight. Secondly, you might be thinking to yourself, do you know what, Emma? I recognize that I loved being in control too. and you recognize that you need to address some of those areas, it's not massive life-changing things. I'm not asking you to change your jobs. I'm asking you to let God show you areas where he's not in control. Maybe he's not got full control of that steering wheel. And secondly, it's being open to God, God's vision for your life. You know, God calls us to be in an intimate relationship with him, to spend time with him, to hang out with him. But how often do we let him just be God? How often do we let him speak to us without us speaking to him? I don't do it enough, to be honest, because I like to talk. Yeah, career teaching, right, career, you get to talk all day. But we need to let God speak to us. So tonight, in this time of response, you know, don't be afraid of coming to the front. You know, I don't like coming to the front either, but actually, sometimes we need to say to Jesus, I'm here, and I'm ready for you to be in control. We need to surrender all of that stuff where we don't want people knowing that we've come to the front. Spending time with God and being open to God is far more important than what anyone thinks of you or why you're up here. They don't know which three you're responding to. And if you're not responding, I'd just say pray, to be honest. Pray or just spend time with God because, you know, it's Sunday, it's a bank holiday, it's going to be busy tomorrow. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to ask the band to come up and they're just going to play some music before we go back in a time of worship and a time of response. And if you're able, I'd ask you to stand. Not that there's anything special about standing, but you've been sitting down for a long time. So stand, you know, do a little shake if you want. And just, you don't have to. There's nothing special about it, but I always like to just have my hands out ready because it's just saying to God, here I am. You're not holding on to anything when you have your hands open. You can't hold on to anything apart from air. And it might be tonight that actually you need God to just hold his hands out to you and to grab hold of them. And that's really scary for some of you. But God's here and he's not going to run away from you. Just have your hands there if you're comfortable. Shut your eyes if it helps you. Let's just allow ourselves to be in the presence of God. Father God, we thank you that even when we mess up and when we think we have all the right answers, we are often so wrong. Spirit of God, just show us in our hearts, in our innermost beings, where it is our heart and our minds are separate things. God, we want our heart and mind consumed by the love of the living God. We want to be agents in this world for change, but we recognize that we are broken people who need to realign ourselves with our Heavenly Father's vision. God, you know our hearts. You know what it is we need to be in control of, what we're fearful of, and how actually we're insecure people. Teach us to just trust in you, Lord, even though it goes against everything our world says. Lord, would we release our hands on our steering wheel and let you come and put your firm hands on them? God, would we see from behind what it's like to be kingdom people, to live lives that reflect the wonder of our God that we serve? Lord, would we know you more? Would we be open to you, Father? And would our hearts be on fire for declaring that you are the Son of God? You are living and your spirit is here in this world. Father, teach us how to have that vision. Nudge us where we need to be nudged. And guide us, Father, guide us so that we do not have to be fearful, but we can just trust in you. And so, if there is any of those three things tonight that are just speaking to your heart and God has been showing you something, whether it is recognizing Jesus as the Son of God tonight for the first time, come down to the front. We would love to pray with you and to welcome Jesus into your life. It is never too late. It's never too early. Jesus is waiting. And if actually you've recognized tonight in this time of just waiting on God that there's a point in your life that you're still having control over, and you know it's what you want and what the world wants, but it's not what God wants,
then come on down. And if actually you're thinking to yourself, yeah, God's in control, but I don't trust the vision he's got for my life. It's too big, it's too different. Or actually, you don't even know what that vision is. Come on down to the front as well, because we love to pray. And the prayer ministry team will come forward. And if there's lots of you, because we don't have to be afraid to respond, there are also lots of people here that can pray for you. And actually, if you just want to spend time with God, Nikki and Alice have got some great songs that we're just going to lead us into a time of being with God. So you've all got something to be doing. And you've all got someone to be engaging with. God, your Father, who is with you.